WMFO, Medford. Long before dogs had their own department stores, radio was the first in electronic entertainment to erode the human sensibilities. Good morning. My name is Arthur. It is the 24th of November, 2021. Like I indicated last week, I'm going to continue with a Mr. Chameleon. It's kind of, I have mixed emotions, mixed feelings about Mr. Chameleon. I feel like radio could be a little bit better. But this is, I think this is episode 3. It was produced by Frank and Ann Hummert, who are noted for their soap opera work. Anyway, here we go. This is Death and the Dependent Husband, with an original air date of the 4th of August, 1948.
Tonight, we again present the famous Mr. Chameleon of Central Headquarters in his most famous cases of crime and murder, brought to you by the makers of Bayer Aspirin. For those who do not know who Mr. Chameleon is, we give a quick sketch of his character. Born of a well-to-do family and a college man, he tried from childhood to live up to the name he bore, Chameleon, by taking on the color of whatever situation in which he found himself, appearing in endless guises, finally entering the police force, where he became known as Chameleon, the man of many faces, the underworld's most dreaded man. Throughout this series, the listener will invariably know who Mr. Chameleon is, no matter in which disguise he appears. But the criminal he's tracking seldom does. Tonight we give you Mr. Chameleon and the case of Death and the Dependent Husband. It is late afternoon, and in the modernistic bedroom of her East 50s apartment, Andrea Shepherd is packing. Packing and trying to give her sympathetic attention to her husband, John, who is stretched out on the bed. And she says to him gently,
"Oh, darling, please, why must you torment yourself with all these doubts? You know I love you. I hate to leave you like this, but after all..."
"After all, you have to bring home the bacon. You're Andrea Shepherd, the successful fashion designer, and aren't I lucky that you are so successful?
John...
According to your friends, I'm the luckiest man in the world. They don't even believe I'm sick. They say I like having you support me."
"Well, I know better. John, dear, I should be back Friday morning."
"Cliff, that charming half-brother of mine, even accuses me of being in love with your secretary."
"Oh, certainly by Friday noon at the latest. The fashion show takes place on Thursday night, and if I can catch a sleeper back to New York, I will. Otherwise, I'll fly."
"Andrea, are you listening to me?"
"Oh, John, you forget I've heard all this a million times before."
"But they all say..."
"I don't care what my friends say. I don't care what your half-brother Cliff says. He's no good. You've lent him too much money as it is."
"Yes, and he hates me for it. He's even threatened me. He says if you really understood me, you'd leave me."
"Well, I do understand you, and I shan't leave you. As for your being in love with my secretary, darling, well, I'm very fond of Louise Clark, but I really don't think she's a threat to our marriage."
"I must admit she's got quite a crush on me. She knows I'm sickly, that I don't just sponge on you."
"So do I, John. And now, please, will you stop thinking about it? Just take care of yourself until I get back. And before you know it, darling, I will be back." John, I'm home. John, sweetheart.
Andrea. Oh, Andrea, thank heavens you're here.
Well, Louise, what's the matter?
He's dead. He's dead.
Who?
John.
John?
When I got here this morning to go over your mail, he didn't answer the bell. The superintendent let me in and we found him in the kitchen, slumped over the table. He'd been dead for hours, Andre. He'd been poisoned.
John dead? No. No, no, he can't be. John! John!
And now, at Central Headquarters in the office of the Commissioner of Police, we find the Commissioner restlessly pacing the floor. And with him is the famous Mr. Chameleon, the man of many faces, the scourge of the underworld, who at present looks completely mild and harmless as he smiles and says,
"You know, Commissioner, if you aren't careful, you're going to burst a blood vessel."
"It's 3 months since John Shepherd was murdered, and we haven't dug up enough evidence to hold anyone."
"Well, what about the half-brother and Mrs. Shepherd's secretary?"
"We had to let them go.
Oh?
What else could we do? Now, Louise Clark is an emotional, neurotic young girl who admitted she had an unrequited love for John Shepherd."
"Unrequited love is a form of poison, too."
"Sure it is, Chameleon. But Andrea Shepherd stuck by the girl, just the way she stuck by her hypochondriac husband. As for Cliff Shepherd, the brother, well, he's a bad egg. Apparently he lived off John."
"Who lived off his wife? Sound like charming people."
"Well, the brothers hated each other. The night that John died, Cliff was quarreling with him. Yeah, we had a fine case against Cliff."
"But you had to let him go."
"We couldn't prove that Cliff had brought John those almond cakes in which we found the poison. The bakery that sold them had 100 customers that day."
"So the poison was inserted later, eh? Well, nothing will kill the taste like almond flavoring."
"Exactly, Chameleon. Furthermore, we could find no trace of where it was bought. So we had to let Cliff Shepherd and Louise Clark go."
"Mm-hmm.
Now, don't start quoting that pet motto of yours. The innocent must be protected and the guilty punished. I'm not in the mood."
"It's still a good motto, Commissioner."
"I wish you'd been free at the time to take the case. After 3 months, the trail's pretty cold."
"Well, that has its advantages, too. After 3 months, the killer feels fairly safe."
"Hmm?
Look, Commissioner, let's send out a story saying the Shepherd murder is an unsolved case. That'll make them feel even safer."
"All right."
"Good. Meanwhile, I want to meet Andrea Shepherd, murdered man's wife, and her secretary, and Cliff Shepherd. Let's see now, how'll I do that? What sort of a man would start courting a 3 months widow because he'd fallen in love with a picture in the papers?"
"I'd say a fool, Chameleon."
"Yes. No, that's it.
Hmm?
A fool, but an entertaining fool, with money in his pocket. Maybe he works for a big chemical company." "Yes. I can see him, Commissioner. A natty dresser who laughs all the time at his own jokes. Yes, sir, Larry Whitlock is quite a card."
"Is that going to be his name, Chameleon?"
"That is going to be my name, Commissioner. From this point on, I am Larry Whitlock." "Darling, can hardly wait till tonight. Your witless friend, Whitlock." How's that, Dave? That's not bad, eh?
"You know, Mr. Chameleon, if you have to keep this up much longer, you're honestly going to start thinking those jokes are funny."
"Well, never mind, Dave. I'm making headway. Tonight, for the first time, I'm having dinner with Andrea Shepherd. Took weeks of flowers and telegrams to do it, but at last I'm having dinner with her at the Coronet restaurant."
"Alone?"
"Dave, for a detective sergeant of police, you ask more questions."
"Alone?"
"No. Philip Hawley will be with us. He's the dress manufacturer for whom she does most of her designing. Nevertheless, I expect to escort her home. And finally, meet..."
"That's home, all right, won't you, Mr. Whitlock?"
"Oh, don't worry. Though I warn you, I'll make love to her all evening."
"Well, that's all right, just as long as she keeps on laughing."
"Oh." "Andrea, I don't think he takes me seriously, but he will someday. He will, he will, he will. Now, let's see. What do I want for dessert?"
"Oh, yes, we'd better order it if Philip has to leave soon."
"Yes. I know. That cake with almond filling that they make especially of here. I'm simply crazy about anything with an almond filling." But what's the matter? Oh, Andrea. Oh, darling, I'm so sorry. How stupid of me. I completely forgot about your husband."
Thank you.
Andrea, darling, are you still upset?
Oh, Larry, of course not. Please stop talking about it. Oh, this is my apartment. You'll come in for a minute, won't you?
Well, I'll come in for several minutes. But I know that you've been upset. You've hardly heard what I said during the past hour.
Well, Larry, I was a little upset. I love John very much. He was both my husband and my child.
Well, who do you think killed him? Surely not your secretary. Now, you said you have her living here with you. Surely if you thought she'd killed him...
Larry, Louise is a very tragic girl. But lately she's frightened me. She's even talked of suicide.
No. In fact... No, I won't do it. You had no business to come here and threaten me this way.
Oh, what's that?
What's Louise? And someone must be with her.
I'll come here as often as I please. And you won't make trouble for me. Not after tonight.
It's Cliff, John's half-brother. What's he doing here? How dare he come here this way? How dare he? Cliff!
Well, Andrea, what a pleasant surprise. We didn't expect you home for hours.
Louise, how did he get in here?
He was here when I got back from the movies, Andrea. He let himself in with a skeleton key.
What?
Sure I did. I thought I'd take a look around. I'm trying to find out who killed poor John.
You mean you were after money? He asked me for money, Andrea. And then he started saying terrible things about John and me again.
All of them true. John himself told me you were so crazy in love with him, you scared him to death.
Be quiet and get out.
Oh, I know. You're so loyal, Andrea. Just the way you were loyal to your chiseler of a husband.
I said get out. I'm fully convinced it was you who killed John. It was just too bad the police couldn't hold you.
Well, let me tell you something. I heard from certain friends of mine that a man named Chameleon has been put on the job. The smartest detective in the business. You never know when he's around. You never know. Anyway, somebody better start watching his step.
And what are you so scared of, old boy? Or shouldn't I ask?
What?
And where did you hear this rumor? Do you have friends in the underworld, eh?
Who the devil are you? Andrea, who is he?
This is a friend of mine, Mr. Whitlock. Larry, this is Cliff Shepherd. And this is my secretary, Louise Clark.
How do you do, Mr. Whitlock?
How do you do? And as for you, old boy, I wish I could say I was glad to meet you, but I'm sure you wouldn't want me to tell a lie now, would you? Huh?
Very funny. Where'd you pick up this character, Andrea? Consoling yourself pretty quickly, aren't you?
Listen, old boy.
And don't call me old boy. I might suddenly decide to slap you down.
Oh. Really? You mean like this? Oh.
Larry!
Mr. Whitlock!
What did you do to me? You threw me over your shoulder. How did you do it?
Nothing to it, old boy. That's just something I studied in college. In fact, I majored in it. Shall I do it again?
No, no.
Well, then I suggest that you leave quietly. Andrea already has asked you twice. I, my friend, will ask you only once.
Oh, Larry, really, it was just too funny. I didn't expect it from you.
I know. Most people think I'm good for nothing except clowning, Andrea. You know, if I were you, I'd be afraid of Cliff.
I am.
You also should be a little afraid of your secretary, Louise Clark. That's a very sick girl. You don't know which way she'll jump.
Poor child. She's probably crying herself to sleep right now. Larry, you see that cigarette box on the table next to you?
Yes, yes.
Open it.
Oh. Plays a tune.
Yes, that was John's favorite piece. Louise gave him the box. She spent a whole week's salary for it. She... Larry.
What was that?
It sounded like Louise. It came from her room.
Come on.
Louise! Louise, are you all right?
Miss Clark?
Try the door.
It's locked.
Locked? Oh, no. Louise, open the door. Oh, what's happening in there? Larry, what's happening?
Get out of the way, Andrea. I'm going to break in the door.
Louise.
Miss Clark, what happened? Who did this?
Oh, she's ill. Look, Larry, there on the dresser. Some of the almond cakes, just like the ones that killed John.
Mr. Chameleon and the Case of Death and the Dependent Husband continues in just a moment. And now back to Mr. Chameleon and the case of death and the dependent husband. It is the following morning, and again we find Mr. Chameleon in the police commissioner's office. And this time it is he and not the commissioner who is pacing nervously about the room.
How is Louise Clark? What's the latest report, Commissioner?
I'm afraid she's still in a coma, Chameleon. I met her at the hospital, but she hasn't been able to talk, so we still don't know exactly what happened.
Well, do they think there's a chance that she might die?
Well, apparently there is.
Mm. What about Cliff Shepherd?
He's gone.
I'm not surprised.
We sent out an alarm for him right after you telephoned, but he's already skipped.
Did they check on the almond cakes?
Miss Clark herself had bought them. Mm. The baker was able to swear to that. He remembered her this time.
She and Shepherd certainly had a fatal taste for almond cakes.
Well, Chameleon, you know as well as I do, it's the one thing that'll make that poison palatable.
Quite right, Commissioner. Well, that's one way of killing yourself.
You think that's what it was? Attempted suicide?
Possible. Almost anything is possible now. Lord knows Cliff Shepherd had plenty of time to put the poison in those cakes. Been there at the Shepherd apartment for some time when Louise Clark got in from the movies last night.
Well, Chameleon, does it occur to you that if Cliff murdered John Shepherd, he might have hidden the poison right there in the apartment?
Oh, of course. Well, Commissioner, I guess it's up to me to locate that poison.
I wish you luck. The Shepherd apartment was searched this morning. The boys couldn't find any trace of poison anywhere.
If only Dave Arnold would get in touch with me.
Well, apparently Detective Sergeant Arnold is having his troubles, too. That's the most elusive poison I've ever come up against.
I'd better get me a search warrant.
Hey, wait a minute, Chameleon. Do you really intend to search Mrs. Shepherd's apartment?
I do. I have a hunch the poison's still there. And, Commissioner, I want to get my hands on it fast.
But how the devil will you work it? Now, you're disguised as Larry Whitlock, a gay young blade who's employed by a chemical company. What reason could you give her for searching the apartment?
Mm. The very best reason in the world, Commissioner.
I'm glad you find it so funny.
I'm sorry. As Larry Whitlock, I have acquired the bad habit of finding myself amusing. But it'll pass. Mm. And seriously, I'm going to search that apartment. And believe it or not, Andrea Shepherd will let me go ahead and do it.
So you see, Andrea, I acquired an interest in chemistry at a very early age. And just between you and me, darling, am I boring you? Because if I am, don't tell me.
Oh, Larry, really?
I haven't gotten a single laugh out of you all evening.
Well, there are times when people don't feel like laughing. You seem to forget Louise may be dying.
Oh. Did you go to the hospital this afternoon?
Yes. She didn't even recognize me. I'm so frightened, Larry. I have a terrible feeling I may be next.
Oh, no, darling. No, that's not possible. I'm here, aren't I? Not that that would stop it.
Oh, Larry.
Well, at least that got a little response. Andrea, I'm crazy about you. I'm simply crazy
no,
about
please.
You. No, please. No, I am. Now, don't pull away from me. I may be a clown, but I make love very nicely.
No, Larry, no.
Oh, saved by the bell.
Oh, you see, you can't even be serious about your lovemaking. Honestly, Larry, I've never known such a character. Hello?
If that's Philip Hawley, hang up.
Shh. What's that? Oh, just a moment, please. It's for you, Larry, a Mr. Arnold calling you from Buffalo.
Oh, well, thank you. I left this number down at the hotel. Hello, Dave? Yes? You did? Good. Huh? Huh? Okay, Dave. That means I can close the deal immediately. Bye.
Well, that was a fascinating conversation. Business?
Yes, Andrea, a very big deal. And now, where were we? I was sitting with my left arm around
Larry,
you.
Larry, wait, I have something to tell you. I shouldn't even have let you bring me home tonight. You see, my dear, I'm going to marry Philip Hawley.
What?
Yes. I'm not in love with him. I'll never be in love with anyone but John. But he's kind and so solid.
And I'm not solid.
Hardly. Oh, you're fun and full of tricks that amuse people. But I want someone I can lean on. I'm sorry, Larry.
Well, darling, now I'll tell you something. I'm Mr. Chameleon.
Who?
Mr. Chameleon.
You mean the famous detective? The one that Cliff Shepherd was talking about?
Yes.
Oh,
What's the matter?
Oh, I get the point. If I'm going to marry Philip Hawley, you're Mr. Chameleon. You really don't believe I'm going to marry Philip, do you?
And you don't really believe I'm Mr. Chameleon. Fair enough.
Well, I am going to marry Philip Hawley. And I certainly don't believe you're Mr. Chameleon, the famous detective.
Well, then I'll have to prove it to you, darling. I'm going to search the apartment.
Oh, Larry, you idiot.
Yes, I am. Andrea, where shall I start? I wonder if the poison could be hidden in these books.
Oh, now listen, Larry, fun is fun.
Nothing in the books. Well, what about this vase? No, nothing in there either.
Larry, how long do you intend to keep this up? You certainly run a joke right straight into the ground.
I have to prove to you that I'm Mr. Chameleon, don't I?
I'm afraid I'll have to prove to you that I'm in no mood for jokes tonight. Will you forgive me, Larry, if I get you your hat?
What? Go ahead, Andrea. Will you forgive me if I tap the woodwork to see if it's hollow?
Oh, go ahead.
No, seems to be perfectly solid. Just like my head. Beat you to it, darling.
Larry, where did you leave your hat?
Put it in the closet. Now, let's see. Cigarette box. Musical cigarette box that plays a tune when you raise the cover. Nothing but cigarettes. Unless...
What are you doing?
What, dear?
What are you doing with that box?
Well, I'm going to examine it. Thoroughly, I might add.
No, put it down. I won't have anyone touching that box. It belonged to John. Put it down.
So that's where the poison is hidden. I thought so. Well, I'll have to pry off the top of the lid.
Don't you touch it.
My. But we're getting excited, aren't we? Let's see. Where is my penknife? Here we are.
I warn you. If you touch that box, Larry, I will...
Chameleon is the name. And I happen to have a search warrant right here with me.
You won't need it, Chameleon. Put it away.
What?
Philip.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Philip Hawley, the not-so-solid businessman, my successful rival, or John Shepherd's successful rival, I might add. The two of you planned his death together, didn't you?
Save your breath, Chameleon. It won't do you any good. And drop that penknife.
I...
That's better. Andrea, search him. See if he has a gun.
I haven't.
Search him, Andrea.
But, Philip, you don't think... He's not really Mr. Chameleon.
Of course he is. Oh, he fooled me, too. But you, Andrea, you little moron, you had to give it away.
He guessed the poison was in the music
guessed.
Box.
Guessed? You practically told him.
Like, I couldn't help it. I was so nervous. Why shouldn't I be nervous?
Why, that's right. It's poor Andrea who did all the dirty work. First John and then Louise, because Louise might suspect. As Andrea so rightly said, why shouldn't she be nervous?
Aren't you just a bit nervous, Mr. Chameleon? You should be. You'll never get out of here alive to tell your story.
I don't have to.
What do you mean?
Well, that phone call a moment ago was from Detective Sergeant Arnold, who was calling me from Buffalo. He called me, Andrea, to tell me that at last he'd managed to trace the sale of that poison.
Philip!
See, I sent Dave to Buffalo because I knew that you had spent quite a lot of time there, supervising your fashion shows. It was on one of your last trips that you purchased the poison, under another name, but the man who sold it will identify you.
If he finds her...
Also, needless to say, if anything happens to me, the police will know who did it.
Philip, he's right.
Yes, Andrea, but there's one little thing he's forgotten. At least if we get rid of him, we can make a run for it. How about it, Chameleon? Isn't that true?
Quite true.
Philip, don't go so close to him.
Don't be silly. You don't think I'm afraid of him.
Hmm.
I have a gun and he has nothing. Nothing. Have you, Chameleon?
No.
Just the same, don't go too close to him, Philip!
That's too bad. Andrea never did get a chance to tell you I was an expert at jiu-jitsu.
Andrea, when I dropped that gun, why didn't you pick it up?
She was too nervous, Mr. Hawley. Anyway, I have it now, and I think the three of us will take a little ride to police headquarters.
You see, Mr. Chameleon, they hid the poison right here inside the music box. Right under the edge of the lid.
Very clever, Dave. Would you like to take a look at it, Miss Clark?
No, please, Mr. Chameleon. I never want to see that box again.
Okay, Dave, take it away.
Yes, sir.
Miss Clark, may I say something? You're all right now. The doctor's managed to save you from that poison. But there's more than one kind of poison, you know. You must try to forget this. You must forget John Shepherd.
I will. I made up my mind I will, Mr. Chameleon. I was afraid I'd be accused of murder. There's only one thing I can't understand.
Oh?
Why did Andrea kill John? Why didn't she simply divorce him?
I suppose that only a psychiatrist could really answer that one. My guess is that Andrea Shepherd had played a part for years, and she loved it. She loved being the noble young wife. People felt sorry for her. They admired her. They wouldn't have admired her so much if she'd thrown aside a sick husband in order to marry Philip Hawley. You see, when I finish a job, I put aside my disguise. Andrea Shepherd couldn't bear to put aside hers.
And with these words, Mr. Chameleon concludes tonight's murder case. Listen next Wednesday night at this same time for Mr. Chameleon, the man of many faces, in The Vestibule Murder Case. The part of Mr. Chameleon is played by Carl Swenson, with dialogue by Marie Baumer from the original story by Frank and Ann Hummert. Music directed by Victor Arden. Your announcer is Howard Claney.
You're listening to 91.5 FM, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Thank you, President of the Grand Hour Fan Club, for that station ID. We heard Death and the Dependent Husband. Original air date on that was the 4th of August, 1948. We'll go ahead now and have an FCC obligation.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. My name is Arthur, and you are listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. We'll continue the show here with Jeff Regan. I played several Jack Webb dramas over the summer, into July, into September, the end of July, into September. And this one, I believe, this one was the third one he was participated in. The Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio deemed this a transition show from Pat Novak for Hire into what would be Dragnet, which would start in 1949. This Jeff Regan Investigator episode is The Pilgrim's Progress. Yes, it has Thanksgiving implications, because tomorrow is Thanksgiving. This had an original air date of the 20th of November, 1948.
I get 10 a day and expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, the Lion's Eye, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of the Pilgrim's Progress.
The Cosmopolitan Building, 7th Street near Olive, downtown L.A., a mess of granite thrown together by an architect who must have taken his degree on the rock pile of Leavenworth. It's up on the third floor, room 308, right next to a credit dentist who shares his office with a collection agency. On the other side, there's a school for models, and the lion's got sore eyes trying to see through that cloudy glass. International Detective Bureau, Anthony J. Lyon, president. He's also vice president, secretary, treasurer. I work for him. Well, the office isn't much, but there's enough elbow room for a client to write a check. I went to the office Friday night about 5:20 answering the lion's call. He was sitting behind the desk sucking on a quarter cigar. He looked real pleased, like a fat lady locked in a cream puff factory.
Man I know had a baby. Plumber named Broman or Groman or something like that.
Mazel tov.
Cancel any arrangements you got for the night. I got something for you to do. Got your car?
It's in the lot.
Gas it up. You're taking a trip.
Where to?
Calabasas. A man wants to see you.
I got no friends out there.
Friend of mine, named Hendricks. He counts his money with an adding machine, and his finger's always swollen.
What's the problem?
I don't know. He didn't say. He just called and told me to send out a man.
How much did he give you for a retainer?
When an important man like Hendricks calls you, don't insult him by asking for money.
Oh, stop it, will you? You're the kind of guy who'd steal pennies out of parking meters.
That's enough, Regan.
If one of them turned up empty, you'd sue the city.
Here's the Hendricks address. Now get out there.
All right.
Regan.
Yeah?
Remember, do a good job and I'll give you Thanksgiving off. And I'll pay you.
With what, cranberries? Well, I headed out Beverly and then up through Hollywood. You know, it's only November, but Santa Claus is breaking out all over the boulevard. I fought my way over Cahuenga Pass, and by the time I was dodging station wagons on Ventura, it was dark. Calabasas is a place with a couple of service stations, a hot dog stand, and a few road signs full of buckshot. The Hendricks place turned out to be about 5 miles down a road that the Indians built for hauling firewater. I guess they couldn't keep the cork in. But the house itself was strictly prohibition stuff. Big pile of slate roof and leaded windows. It looked dark and lonesome. I figured somebody had their holidays mixed.
Hiya, pilgrim!
It was a big fat guy. He was holding a 6-foot gun in the shape of a straightened out tuba. He came closer and I could see his hat. It was a high one with a buckle on it. He was dressed in black and he had buckles all over him. I figured that I'd been eating too much Quaker oats.
What's the matter, pilgrim? A little shooting make you nervous?
That's a big gun, there.
Shoots musket balls. Good for Indians.
Well, I'm no Indian.
Oh, I wasn't aiming at you.
Well, that gun wouldn't know the difference.
It's a blunderbuss. Great weapon.
Is it?
I show you. Hey, you prop it up on a crutch.
Just keep fooling with that thing, and we'll both need one.
Shut up. Be quiet. Load the barrel. Lots of powder.
Look, why don't you give that thing back to the museum?
He does it. It's more powder. Gotta use lots of this black powder.
But sure you need black coffee. Come on, give me that thing before it blows up in your face. You broke a window.
Oh, it's all right. It was only the attic.
You live here?
Of course not, pilgrim. I'm Miles Standish.
Well, where's the rest of the party?
All inside, talking to John Olden.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, you just think I'm kidding, don't you? Pilgrim, you just haven't got the Mayflower spirit.
No, you drank it all.
It's just cider. Nothing better on a cold New England night.
Thanksgiving's not for a week. Come on, get off it.
Hark.
What's the matter? Put that down.
I'm not going to shoot him. He's a friendly type.
Brother Regan?
Yeah?
If thou wilt follow me, please.
Oh, you too, huh?
I beg your pardon.
Okay.
Well, so long, pilgrim.
Yeah, keep your powder dry, Standy.
I'll see you on Plymouth Rock.
Okay, this way, Brother Regan.
Now, look, Sunshine, you work here.
My name is Phelps.
Why don't you lock that guy up?
I'd be outnumbered, sir. 21 pilgrim.
Bad winter. They make you wear those corduroy knickers?
Knee breeches, sir. It was Priscilla's idea.
You need a union.
I need more shapely legs. Through here.
Well, that's quite a place you got.
Well, it looks better without the decorations, sir.
Yeah. How do you keep from stepping on these pumpkins?
It's only when they use them for bowling that it's difficult.
Come on, fill me in. What's this all about?
Thanksgiving, sir. 1621. Okay, this room here, sir. Go right in.
Okay.
Shut the door. Shut it.
Mr. Hendricks around?
He's not here. Come over, sit down.
Who are you, Priscilla?
Don't. Please don't say another word of that silly rigmarole, or I'll start screaming.
Yeah, well, I could use a little yell myself.
I'm Agnes. I'm Mrs. Hendricks. Or Agnes.
It doesn't make any difference.
Start to my friends. Didn't I say sit down?
Yes, you did, and I didn't. So you don't like the party, huh?
I'm not much of a Puritan, Mr. Regan.
Well, that Great Dane says the masquerade was your idea.
Oh, Phelps is stupid. This goes on all weekend, Mr. Regan. It's called a turkey shoot.
Oh, so that's it. Who gets the bird?
The Pilgrim Fathers, my husband's friends. They ought to be shot, every one of them.
Yeah, well, I'm not from the SPCA.
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Regan. I like you.
That's not the point.
I won't bore you.
Your husband might.
Him. He's crazy, Mr. Regan. Crazy as the things he does. Shooting, drinking, spending money.
A hard life.
I don't know how I stood it for as long as I have. My lawyer says I'm the most patient woman in the world.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the conversation, Ms. Hendricks.
Why did my husband send for you?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You do know. Tell me.
I don't know.
Please. You don't realize what kind of a man my husband can be.
I never met him.
You don't know how much I need help. How lonely I am.
Well, where is he?
I'll tell you if you promise to come back to me.
No, I'll write you a letter.
He's out in the shed, other side of the patio.
Thanks.
I wouldn't act this way if I weren't so frightened. You don't know what it is to be frightened all the time.
No, but I'm learning.
I wish you'd stick around, Mr. Regan.
Well, thanks, Mrs. Hendricks, but the pin feathers are a little sharp. Mrs. Hendricks went back to her worrying, and I wound my way through the house looking for the back entrance. My legs got tired before it finally showed on the other side of the pantry. It poured out into a flagstone patio as big as the Palladium. A walk took me to a shed. It was a two-story redwood place that must have made a loud noise on the cash register, and alongside, fenced in with chicken wire, was a whole population of turkeys. Well, I went into the shed. A little round-faced guy with pink skin was leaning over a barrel of cider. He wore a blue silk smoking jacket with gold initials EH on the pocket. When he caught my footsteps, his head bobbed up and he gave me a deep look like he was trying to see the back of my eyeball.
Yes?
I'm Regan, International Detective Bureau.
Oh, I've been expecting you. I'm Hendricks.
Yeah, I know. Why the fireworks?
Eh? Oh! Miles Standish. Just having fun. It's a party, you know. Big party we're having here.
Yeah, well, the neighbors will complain.
Ah, neighbors. None for miles around. That's why I like it out here. Have trouble finding me?
You ought to put up signs.
Signs? Glass of cider, Regan? Care for a glass?
I'm not thirsty.
Yeah. That's not what it's for. Strong kind. Oh, go on. Thanksgiving soon. Get the spirit.
No, I can hold out till Thursday.
Suit yourself. Excuse me. Good. Yeah. It's going to be quite a party here, you know.
Your wife's got a different version.
Oh, you spoke to her?
Yeah.
You were told to come out here to see me?
I got sidetracked.
It's not good for a man in your position.
All right, Hendricks, why am I here?
What'd she say to you?
I forgot.
Regan, you're making me angry.
Now, look, mister, you didn't get me out here to make a pilgrim out of me.
No, of course not. Fine woman, Mrs. Hendricks. We've been married for years, you know, happily. Fine little woman. Just she makes me a little nervous at times.
Mm-hmm. You like the sound of guns going off?
Ah, she shouldn't get so excited. Boys just having a little fun. It's only once a year. What's wrong with that?
Come on, now, what's the job?
Didn't the line tell you?
He said you would.
Oh, well, nothing to be so mysterious about. I've just got a package I want you to take to. Here it is. A turkey.
You got me all the way out here to play escort to that bird?
Well, I just want to be friendly. Here. Now, go on. It's a long way back to L.A. And you want to be there for Thanksgiving.
What's the difference? I got the turkey. I can celebrate any time. 60 miles to do a delivery job bird. Well, I wandered back to my car and I
listened to the crickets and the gunshots try to outdo each other. And then I dumped the turkey into the back seat and I started the car down the drive. I'd just thrown it around the bend when the headlights caught a pair of buckle shoes and black knee breeches. Miles Standish was lying face down in the dirt and with a wet shine on his side. He was breathing hard. Blunderbuss was lying beside him, and I figured that he blew out the wrong end. I would have gone for the Hendricks phone and a doctor, but I got a good look at the holes in him, and I headed for a hospital instead. The blunderbuss may have been kicking up a fuss, but the holes in Miles Standish were 20th century, about the size of a 32. I turned him over to an emergency hospital, and I put a call into the sheriff's office. I gave the story to a Lieutenant Robinson, and then I headed back toward town. At the Lion's place, the lights were still on, so I figured he didn't have company. I rapped on the door, and he flung it open before the echo could die away. He had a carving knife in one hand, and he was wearing an apron. His eyes were big, and he had an eager look, like a college couple on Mulholland Drive.
Regan, you're back.
Well, now, that takes a big brain.
I've been waiting for you. You know, I had a chance to go to a classy party tonight. Russian caviar and champagne and favors to all the guests. Know why I didn't go?
You lost your crash suit, huh?
I said to myself, is it fair to go out and have a good time while my employee is working real hard for international detectives?
The answer came out yes, but the party was called off.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was. But I wouldn't have gone anyway. Where is it?
Where's what?
The package from Hendricks.
Now, you can change your plans, Big Shot. You're getting a bundle of trouble instead.
What do you mean?
Turkeys aren't the only thing they're knocking off out on that ranch. Huh? Somebody's handy with a 32 and he's found a target.
You've been drinking?
Check the county emergency hospital. They'll show you the holes.
I send you out on a simple little job and you come back with a crazy story about a shooting. You're out of your mind.
Now listen, you, there's a big smell out in Calabasas.
What about my turkey?
The sheriff's office are going to have a lot of questions. You got the answers?
I don't know anything. I was miles away.
Well, then find out something. Check into the guy who shot. Find out who he is, what he does, and what he was doing out at Hendricks.
Where are you going?
To scratch around in the Hendricks closet. They tell different stories about their wedded bliss.
Hey, Regan.
Yeah?
Where's my turkey?
It's too rich for your blood, fatso. Stick to chicken. Well, I left him standing there with his apron hanging out. Miles Standish might get enough wind to do that extra hole to say who shot him, but more likely not. Anyway, with the bucket load he had, he would have sworn it was the last of the Mohicans. But there was an angle to that Hendricks woman, even if it didn't show. So I walked up the street to where my car was nuzzling a lamppost. The turkey and I were just going to wake up a newspaper office, only something changed my mind. A newspaper. It was wrapped around a bundle, and the bundle was under a guy's arm, and the arm was shutting the door of my car. Now, good evening, Pop.
Hi.
Going somewhere?
Sure. Find a place to sleep, that's all.
Want a cigarette?
Say, I don't mind if I do. Thought you was a bull for a minute. You mind if I take two?
No, help yourself.
My brother smokes, too. And not much in the streets these days.
Yeah, it's bad all over.
Yeah, something ought to be done.
Stick around, Pop.
No, sonny. You give me smokes. I don't hit you for cash. It's a rule I got.
I'll make the touch.
Is that?
What's in the newspaper?
Russia.
Inside.
A funny paper.
Yeah, sure.
Well, now take it easy, boss. The guy's got a right to his privacy.
You weren't sleeping in my car.
Oh, so that's it. Yours, huh? Small world, ain't it?
Yeah, come on, let's unwrap.
Now, it's Thanksgiving, Mac. Ain't you heard of Thanksgiving?
I'm going to plug my ears. Give.
Now, please, Mac, show me the spirit. Once in my life, both drumsticks.
Huh? Stop it. You're breaking my heart.
I mean it, Mac. Let me have it. I'll break the wishbone for you, sonny. I will. You ain't got no use for all that meat, have you? Oh, you have, huh? Well, so long, Mac.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold it.
No, let go of my arm.
That was a pretty dance, but you should have changed your shoes.
What's that?
You didn't get those buckles in the bread line.
Oh.
Now, come on. Change the record. Who are you?
That's none of your business. Let go.
I said talk.
I will not.
You're from the Hendricks place, aren't you? You're from the...
Thank you, Phelps.
That's all right. Got the bird?
Sure. Let's go.
Yeah. Nighty night, Pilgrim.
And now, back to Jeff Regan, investigator, and the story of the Pilgrim's Progress.
None of it made sense. The Lion sent me out to pick up a turkey on the Hendricks Ranch in Calabasas.
and the Mr. and Mrs. were having an old-fashioned turkey shoot, and all the guests carried blunderbusses and dressed like pilgrims. Only it wasn't just the turkeys who were acting as targets. One of the pilgrims ended up with some .32 caliber holes in them. And then the Hendrix lackey and a buddy shoved a gun at me and stole a lion's bird. Well, I picked myself up and I went home. A heavy man was doing a heist job on my icebox. He was pouring himself a glass of milk to wash down a sandwich he was munching on.
Hi, Regan.
Okay, right ahead. Help yourself.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't know how long I was going to have to wait, and I was getting hungry.
There's a restaurant just up the block.
I like it better this way, homemade. Fix you a sandwich? Pretty good deviled ham.
Come on, let's close the box and open your mouth, buddy.
Why not? We had a date, remember? Robinson, sheriff's office. Yeah,
that's what I figured.
You don't mind me coming in like this, do you?
What if I did?
Well, I'd leave. Sanctity of the home, you know. You can throw me out even though I got a badge.
Right, let's cut away the fat, mister. What do you want?
Answers to a couple of questions. What were you doing at the Hendrix place?
Picking up a turkey?
Well, that's a new one.
Now, look, you ask him. I'll answer him. Never mind the feature page.
How long have you known the Hendrix?
Never met him before.
Wrong answer.
What do you mean?
We found this out at the Hendrix house. A page torn out of the yellow directory with a red circle around international detective.
Now, that doesn't say a thing.
Maybe yes, maybe no. I'm still scratching around.
It'll ruin your manicure.
You know, Regan, you don't seem to realize the seriousness of this. That pilgrim you dragged in died.
Well, I figured.
We don't like unsolved murders messing up our record books.
Well, then you're wasting your time here.
I got lots of it. I don't come up for pension for 12 more years. What was that pilgrim's name?
He gave me Miles Standish.
Sounds like a fake.
Well, don't count on it. I once knew a John Smith.
Give me the real name.
I don't have it.
All right. He's not a town boy, but we'll track him down. Now, straighten out something for me, Regan. How long did you say you knew the Hendrix?
Now look, I gave this to you once. Nothing's changed.
How come we find a $5,000 check in that joker's pocket made out of cash and signed by Hendrix? Go ahead, answer. Just don't make a date. You may not be available.
Yeah?
Mr. Regan, this is Mrs. Hendrix. I must see you right away.
Who did you say?
Mrs. Hendrix, you remember?
Charlie? No, there's no Charlie here. You must have the wrong number.
Sort of annoying, isn't it, Regan, when you get a wrong number late at night?
Well, it happens.
Sure, it does. Happened to me once.
Anything else you want?
Another deviled ham sandwich?
Kitchen's closed.
Pretty rotten hospitality.
Well, you weren't asked.
Okay, I gotta move anyway. See you later, Regan. Keep the mud off your shoes.
E-R-3-4-0-8.
Hello?
Mrs. Hendrix, this is Regan.
I just called you.
Well, I couldn't talk. What do you want?
Can you come out, Mr. Regan? Right away.
You're still lonely?
Things aren't going well.
Well, murder's like that.
I've got to talk to somebody. Won't you please come?
Give me a reason.
I can tell you some things now I couldn't mention before.
Like why your husband wrote a $5,000 check to the dead man?
Check? But there must be some mistake.
What do you mean?
My husband couldn't write a check that large. He doesn't have any money of his own. It's all in my name.
All right. Put a lantern in the window, lady. I'll need some light. Well, I headed out there fast. But when I raised a racket with a brass knocker, nothing happened. I tried a window, and a couple of scratches later, I was in the hall. The place looked empty, like the Rose Bowl on January 2nd. I found Ms. Hendricks' room, where I talked to her and stepped inside. The decorations were different.
Sheriff's office. Robinson.
This is Regan. I got something for you.
It better be good.
You're going into overtime.
What do you mean?
Bring some boys out to the Hendrix place with them. Well, the time was ticking out, but the game wasn't over yet. We figured to have a fast finish, and the Lion had a pretty good idea about catching some shut-eye. So I moved to the office and a stretch out on the couch. But through the glass, I could see there was a light on. Company was inside.
Crestview 2045. Phelps, no luck. I looked all over. I told you, I saw the plate apart. Nothing's here. I'm trying my best. Stop harping. Oh, well, it must be someplace else. Okay, right away.
Leave a nickel, Buster.
Huh? Oh, Regan.
You looking for something?
You, Pilgrim.
What else?
Plymouth Rock.
Come on, punk, level it.
It coax me.
All right, Nick, because you've been trying for this. Now, flatten out. Well, it felt good to watch the big guy fall. He folded in like a steeple in an earthquake. When his head bounced on the lion's carpet, I figured he was due for a long sleep, so I went through his pockets. Ticket stubs from the prize fights, the gun, and the pocket knife I dumped into the safe. It was a pass to the Don's game on November 25th. He must have swiped that from his boss, so I filed that in the lion's desk for future reference. But this guy Phelps had taken orders from somebody besides Hendricks. I just heard him do it on the phone. So when I turned up an old envelope with 832 North Palm scratched in the back, I crossed my fingers. He'd been calling a Crestview number, and the phone book said that I had a lead. North Palm was in the Crestview exchange area. So I called for the cops to sweep up Brother Phelps, and I climbed back onto my broomstick. I drove out through Beverly Hills. I wound up in front of a big Spanish house with potted $10 bills on the driveway. There was a new Nash sticking out of the garage, and I walked around to take a look. But honest John had beat me to it.
Who's there?
Now stick around. I want to talk to you.
Stand back. Stand back.
You like cars, don't you? Maybe you want a hot rod.
No, you don't. Get away from me.
Hey. Well, it was the little turkey fan that I'd last seen in an overcoat. Phelps' buddy. He took out of there like a cow in deer season, so I let him go. No license. Well, I took a look around the car he'd been sniffing, but nothing showed except the registration. It said Mrs. Agnes Hendricks. I went to the house and rang the doorbell, and she answered.
Oh, what's you? I'm Mr. Regan.
All right, I'll ask myself in.
Yes, come in.
Who are you expecting, John Alden?
No, I'm glad to see you.
You know, I don't like girls who break dates.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that's one thing.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't wait for you to come all the way to Calabasas.
You got impatient on account of a body in the house.
You saw him?
Yeah, after I tripped over him in your room.
I didn't do it.
Did I say you did?
You've got to believe me.
Relax. I look like a jury. You've got multiple vision.
Oh, Mr. Regan, I was so frightened. I didn't know which way to turn.
We've been through all that woman driver routine. You don't like your husband. You wanted to get rid of him.
But only in Reno.
All right, now let's get back to page one. You gave 250 G's to a jeweler named Kelly. You bought a rock.
What?
A rock, Plymouth rock. It's a diamond. It's got to be.
Well,
why'd you do it? Who'd you buy it for?
Myself. My lawyer said I should get it for myself, that's all.
He likes you pretty, huh?
No. It was a community property thing. He said I could keep my husband from knowing how much money I had when he asked for a divorce settlement.
Only hubby got wind of the deal.
I guess so.
You're making sense. Only why did he write a check to Kelly?
Well, it was a small one. It must have been for a paste imitation, don't you think?
It's not my business. Keep dealing.
I mean, maybe he planned on switching them and getting my real one.
That's been done.
But he actually did it. Because all through this, there's been a diamond in the place where I always keep it.
All right, you got a strong boy, Phelps. Had him out looking for the real diamond.
What?
And the other guy, the old man, was out in the garage.
No.
Phelps tore up my office, phoned here to you.
Mr. Regan,
now look, there's been two guys killed.
Mr. Regan.
Good evening, Pilgrim.
Where's your overcoat?
Stand still, please.
Yeah, my foot's in a crack.
Mr. Regan, this is John Alden.
Oh, can it, will you? I've seen him act one part already.
That's true. Mine is the only name that's real. This is my house, Mr. Regan.
Lawyer?
Yes, I came here to see him, Mr. Regan. I just got here before you did.
Be quiet, Agnes.
Well, I got it all now.
You won't keep it.
Phelps took his orders from you.
It's a waste of testimony.
You studied this. Spotted the gem switch. Figured to cash in.
You're losing your chip.
Shut up, will you? I got aces. Hendricks outfoxed you. You never found a real diamond.
Five in a hand draws blood.
Mr. Alden, don't.
Now you keep out of this, Agnes.
She's not in it. You are.
That's all, Regan.
All right, come on. Drop it. Drop it.
Go with that.
I guess I hit him with the paste one.
Huh?
Look, the diamond. It broke.
Yeah.
It was just luck. I have the other one, too. I thought Alden was honest. I came to tell him I found it in my husband's cider.
Well, that tears it. Come on, Priscilla. That docks the Mayflower. The whole thing folded in like an elephant on a pogo stick. Yeah, the lawyer did it all right, both of them. When he spotted what Hendricks was up to with that diamond switch, he moved in, but not for his client. The jeweler, Miles Standish, alias Kelly, got bumped because he was the only one who could tell the real diamond from a phony. But Hendricks got wise to the muscle act, and so he got shot. Well, the lion was real happy the way it worked out. That dame with the nerves wrote him a check. So he invited me out to Thanksgiving dinner.
He offered me any part of the turkey that I wanted. I told him, but I got it anyway.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan, with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon. It's CBS at the same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, investigator. Written by Lane.
Yep, that was Jeff Regan, investigator. It's actually the technical title of it, and the investigator's on the end. The Pilgrim's Progress, with an original air date of the 20th of November, 1948. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Happy Thanksgiving.